Hey everybody, welcome to Take on the Lake with Lake Expo. I'm Nathan Bechtold. Thanks for joining us. So this week we are doubling down on the nostalgia. If you didn't catch last week's episode, make sure you go do that. We had John Flippo on the show. John lives in Osage Beach and runs the Flipback resale store there. But we talked a lot about John's dad, Marshall Flippo. He was a famous square dance caller at Lake of the Ozarks, and John got to talk about his dad, about growing up with a dad who was a square dance caller, and also shared with us a really, really cool song that his dad recorded with the Lee Mace Ozark Opry Band called Welcome to Lake of the Ozarks. We ended the episode last week with that one. So if you haven't listened to that, go take a look at that. You just pause this one right now and go take a look at that episode because you're going to love it. That was a really cool interview, and thanks to John for coming on. So that one really leaned into the nostalgia angle at Lake of the Ozarks. So we're just going to do that again this week. I got the chance to sit down with Cody West. Cody is one of these guys who we actually met online on Facebook and then got to meet in person. And he's one of these people who loves old things, I think, more than new things, actually. Cody and I are about the same age, in our 40s. And you can just tell that Cody has a love for things that were made long before either one of us were born. And so we got to talk a lot about that. I met Cody, like I said, through a Facebook post, actually. Pretty amazing story. We get into it in the interview. He got a hold of one of the original signs from Davis Baskets. Now, if you've been around the lake for a while, you know about Davis Baskets. It was a lake legend. It was just this roadside store, and it sat on Highway 54, a little to the west of Camdenton. And they had everything. They started, I think, with baskets, but they just had everything, t-shirts and postcards and just crazy stuff. And so this place was a lake legend. They're closed now, but everybody who's been coming to the lake for a while remembers Davis Baskets and the Davis Baskets signs, because the signs were just unforgettable. It was a giant head, hillbilly with black hair and a black beard, wearing a gold crown and smoking a corncob pipe. You can still see a few remnants, actually, of those billboards. There were a bunch of them along Highway 54. If you're headed to the lake from Max Creek, you can still see them. And across the street from the old store, there was a giant hand kind of pointing, and underneath it or across the sign, it said, "Here it is." And so it was just larger than life. It was so much of what was great about those days at Lake of the Ozarks and the big, loud, over-the-top tourism scene. So Cody loves old signs. He's actually made kind of a hobby of restoring them, and he legally got a hold of one of those old Davis Basket signs, and he completely restored it. Now it hangs on the side of his barn, way back down a gravel road in an absolutely beautiful property south of Camdenton that you'll never find unless you know exactly where it is. Cody and his lovely wife, Emily, invited me over to see that sign and a lot of the other cool, really old stuff that they have there. We hung out in their barn where he's got this collection of old things, and we talked about the sign, about old things and new things, about the bygone days of the lake. And I think you're gonna enjoy my interview with Cody West. Here it is. Welcome to Take on the Lake. I've got a story for you. All right, so we are talking to Cody West, and we are out at an undisclosed location.
In the sticks.
And we can say what county we're in.
Dallas County.
Dallas County.
Yes.
Not so far from Lake of the Ozarks.
In neighboring, we're the suburbs. Yeah. We're the suburbs.
That's right. Yeah. As I drove out here, I saw remnants of the crazy fires.
Yes.
My gosh, there were so many acres burned.
Wind and fire. Yes, it was the season of the fire.
Did it get very close to you guys?
It did, actually. You can see it from our house. We saw the hills burning, but luckily nothing came over. We have a river that blocks us, so it wasn't as bad as it could be. Yeah. I mean, we're still here.
Right. Yeah. So. Well, and you have a decent place out here. That would have been extra tragic for it to go. There are certain places along the road that probably needed to go anyways.
Garbage dumps, you know.
There would have been a
car washes. We can lose some car washes.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. But no, you guys have a beautiful place.
Thank you.
And so Cody, your passion is old stuff. Is that the right way to say this?
Yes.
Or is there a better way of saying it? Your passion is like old,
well, my
nostalgic, I don't know.
My passion is preserving old stuff and being able to use it in a functional sense in today's world, which is so overpopulated with sharp edges and grays and blacks. I like to bring back the tiger oak wood. I like the old signs. I like the art, right? We've lost a lot of art, I think, in today's culture. And you see a lot of art in the old ways, at least I do anyway. And that's my passion, is bringing that back. And I want someone like yourself to come over and feel like they are stepping back in time, maybe, or seeing some things that they didn't know existed. So yeah, there's a lifetime of learning that you can do to just find out how things used to be done.
Why do you think that we don't do things as beautifully anymore? Because I think about this a lot. It's tragic. And it makes me wonder, actually, I don't wonder. I know for sure that we live in an inferior culture than our forefathers lived in. And you know this for sure because you look around and you can judge a culture by the quality of the things that it produces. Mm-hmm. And I'm partly answering my own question, but I'm telling you what I think, and then I kind of hear your thoughts on it. So I look around and see things that are cheaply made and not beautifully made. Mm-hmm. And even though, I mean, styles come and go, but even with some of the hyper modernist, simplistic stuff, I think it's not very aesthetic, you know? And you see this loss of beauty and aesthetics in our culture, and you kind of, I don't know, you look at that and it's well, for one, it's sad, I think, but it's also, you think it probably has an impact on us and on like children as they grow up and around less beautiful things, things that are made to be beautiful for their own sake, you know, because beauty is a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. So anyways, I don't know, what do you think about that?
It comes down to what a culture values, in my opinion. So, you know, does your culture value cheap, easy, affordable, throw away when it's over, or does your culture value well-made, solid-built, lifetime products that have an artistic vibe to them that you value, right? I mean, you know, you look around at these signs around my place, and these signs were not necessarily intended to be art. They were intended to be very functional. They showed you where to get gas, or they showed you where to buy a Davis basket, right? But even advertising these days is not necessarily what I would call a high art. It's very matter of fact, down to the point, efficient. I think we've become more efficient. And I know we've become more efficient because I guarantee you it's a lot easier to come up with a digital solution than it is to find a hand-painted sign. I mean, think about my buddy Dan Hadley, who painted these signs around here that I value so dearly. You know, he's almost a lost art. Go find a sign painter. Right? Mm-hmm. Go find somebody who still gets up on a 30-foot billboard and maintains a hand-painted sign in order to drive business to a business. And that is fascinating to me where we've come to where everything is vinyl stickers or, you know, digital media. There's art to that too. And I don't want to discredit that and say there's not art. But what I'm saying is there's no computer program that can hand-paint a sign 30 feet in the air, right? I mean, digital has made our life great. I love it. I'm on my phone all day and I do digital stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. But seeing and being close to something that was hand-painted by one person as a form of art in advertising or just in decoration for your home is just amazing to me. It's a lost piece, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you walk through someone's home today, how many real paintings do you see?
Right.
Like how many, you know, you see prints of paintings all day long.
Yeah, I have them in my home. We have some prints that we love, but yeah, nobody,
right.
Nobody actually painted.
I've got a print behind you right now. I mean, I still embrace that too. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm not like stuck in the, you know, 19th century.
Right.
I'm fully digital, but I fully appreciate the analog world. And to me, all of this is just analog world.
And so, yeah. So, I mean, and we kind of dove in here, but like what we're surrounded with sitting in your really cool kind of underdevelopment, but really cool
bar barn.
Yeah, I forgot what you were calling that.
Yeah,
we're surrounded with hand painted original signs, some war memorabilia.
Yeah,
what is this bar situation that we're sitting?
So we are sitting
here. This
underneath.
Is like there's a canopy here, and there's I mean, this is awesome.
So this bar came out of a hotel in Kansas City. And it made its way all the way to Bolivar, Missouri, through several hands. And we were wanting, I've always wanted like a bar, like not a bar. I don't want to own a bar, but I wanted to have like a place where you could hang out to where it's kind of got that vintage old saloon feel. And we found this and we met some folks. And that's a great part about this. When you're collecting this stuff and you're meeting these folks that had this stuff, there's a kindred spirit. And you get to know these people and, you know, you get to hear the story behind them. This particular bar hosted countless parties and fun times and family gatherings. When we bought this, it had like hooks on here for a graduation party for their kids. Oh, cool. So it wasn't just always, you know, being a drunkard.
Carousing.
It was a place to hang out. And having it be from a hotel in Kansas City, that was pretty cool. The cool thing about this is, because it's so old, and I would date it to the 20s or 30s, everything is put together with pegs.
Oh, I love that.
So when we put this together, it was built as a mail order piece that probably came on a wagon or just some sort of an early transport device. And there was no way that this thing could be shipped in this condition.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's huge.
The pillars were all, they're all hand, there's dowels in these pillars. Mm-hmm. So the only screws in this entire thing are right here and right here on the bottom of these pillars.
Okay.
And those screws are the only two screws that hold this entire thing together. Wow. Everything else is just dovetail. And we were thrilled to get it because, you know, I mean.
And where'd you find this?
Bolivar. Bolivar. Yeah. On a digital media. We found it on Facebook Marketplace. So there you go.
The digital just points us back to the real analog experience.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't find half of this stuff without digital media.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's the great thing about digital is that I can find the stuff that I value so much easier than when I was a kid. Like, exactly. Emily's pointing over here to the signs. You know, Emily sent the Basket King sign that she had painted for me. She sent that digitally to my sign painter friend so he could see what needed to be painted. And that's so unbelievably important to ours. I'm not saying we need to give up all of our digital footprint. I'm just saying that it's a balance, I guess.
And, you know, I think, old things connect us to something that, to things that were once true but have changed. And I think that's always useful. And I mean, no society or whatever like stays the same always anyways. So there's something, it's not a like hatred of everything that's new.
Right.
You love things that are old, right?
I love things new. I love things old.
Right.
I love both, for sure.
All right. So, well, you tell me about this dive suit.
So let's talk about digital and how you get old stuff and how great it is. So this is a 1921 Anchor Engineering dive suit. I had to put this together over a course of time, buying the pieces to make it work. The dive suit itself came from Russia. The helmet, of course, it's USA made. But the funny thing about the dive suit, when you're a crazy person like me and you want to actually have a dive suit in your bar barn, you definitely need to have some kind of structure inside of it in order to make it work, right?
Sure,
so you know. So mannequins are weird. You know, I didn't want to go mannequin shopping. I didn't want to get on some kind of blacklist or whatever. So I figured I have to figure out some way to make a structure inside of this, but it had to be, you know, human shaped. It couldn't be just PVC pipe or something like this. So I found out from YouTube searches that there are LARPers out there, and there's people that do like Renaissance festivals that build their costumes and whatnot, and they have a structure behind it. And that structure is made out of expandable post foam, duct tape, and PVC pipe.
Okay.
But the catch is you have to wrap somebody in duct tape, foil, expandable foam, and my beautiful wife.
I know where this is going.
Yeah, my beautiful wife, Emily. This will go ahead and tell you I hit the lottery with Emily because I came home one day and I go, honey, I got an idea.
Oh, no.
And she said, what's the idea? I go, you know my dive suit? You know? And she said, yeah. And I go, we need a structure inside of it. And I've got this plan. I can wrap you in tin foil and then wrap you in duct tape. And then cut you out of it and fill it with post foam, and I'll have an exact replica that I can put inside of my suit.
Perfect.
So she's like, okay, so of course my in-laws are over during this, right?
Oh, great.
Yeah. So my in-laws instantly think I've lost my complete and total mind, which I may have, but Emily stood there for probably an hour and a half. Yeah, she doesn't want to do it again. Once we got into it, it's like one of those things where you start, you can't stop. It's like, you know, I'm like, well, we're already halfway into it, but you can't move. Like, she was up to her neck in foil and duct tape
right.
until like, you know, we cut it off, burn. Then we had like basically a cast of a human figure. And then you duct tape it up, you fill it up with post foam, and then you have a, you have something you could shove into a dive suit. So
awesome.
Inside of this horrendously scary Scooby-Doo villain
it's great.
Dive suit is a duct tape and foil
replica
of my wife.
Your wife. That's great.
Yeah.
I love that story.
Yeah. That was,
you should see the video.
That we have video. Yeah. We don't share that very often, you know, but you know, we don't want to share that with the world.
So what brought me here was the Basket King. I don't remember what I first saw. You shared a photo, I think, of the sign outside that you had started working on, maybe. But again, the story behind that. So you've shared that with me. But rewind. You love the Basket King sign because it's iconic, right?
Well, here's
for folks that don't know, the Basket King sign is from Davis Baskets, which is in Max Creek area, west of Camdenton.
Yeah.
And was a like a true unique original place at the lake. Sold everything. It wasn't just baskets, although there were a ton of baskets, right? Sold everything.
Everything. Like, jams and jellies.
Jams and jellies, yes. Where you just
jams
saw the,
and jellies.
Saw the sign.
Yeah, cubic zirconia jewelry.
T-shirts and souvenirs and like everything under the sun. But it was all, the sense I got was it was all kind of handpicked in a way. Like it all, I think he would travel. What was the guy's name that owned that started?
Delmar.
Yeah. He would travel around and go to places and curate stuff. Or I've read some different things about kind of how he got things in there. I don't know how much you know.
Well, I, you know, I've learned a lot. Okay. And what I'm telling you today is, it's just what I've heard. I went into Davis Baskets when Delmar was behind the counter. Of course, I didn't get to like know him real well. I just kind of shopped there for trinkets and souvenirs when I was a kid. I grew up in Camdenton, Missouri, which is right outside of Max Creek. I went to Camden High School, and my folks, my mom lived in Tunis, Missouri, which is a metropolitan area. Tunis.
Big booming town of Tunis.
Yeah, they're saving up money to get their first stoplight. You know, it's like a big deal. Anyway, so I did a bunch of traveling on Highway 54 my whole life. And, you know, later in life, I lived where I live now and I worked in Osage Beach, right? So I drove 54 every day. I think I figured it up one time. And I think just in my work year, you have 2,080 work days a year. And 2,080 work days a year, or 2,080 work hours a year. Okay, so
like,
hold on, follow me here.
A different year.
Follow me here. No, so I told you I'm old timey.
What planet are
I can't
you on?
Do math, you know. No, so 2,080 work hours a year, and I figured how many times I drove past those signs, and it was like in the tens of thousands of times I drove past those signs. And every time I drove by, every time, without a doubt, I was like, you know, I'd love to have a hillbilly head. It's so cool, right? And the thing is, here's the deal. You can edit that 2,080 days. You're keeping it? Okay,
that's
fine.
That stays.
That's good. All right. Well, that just proves that my math skills are not so great. But here's the deal. So Lake of the Ozarks history is, you know, ingrained in me because my folks grew up in the tourist industry in the 60s and 70s. That's what they did. They played on country music shows at Lake of the Ozarks, Lee Mason's Ozark Opry, Denny Hilton, Country Shindig Opry Show, Main Street Opry. You know, growing up in the tourist industry in that era, 60s, 70s, and 80s, Lake of the Ozarks really cut its teeth on the quote-unquote hillbilly culture. Okay?
Right. Yes.
So it was all a big joke, like hillbilly joke. You know, like, come on down, folks. We're going to go down to the lake and we're going to see some hillbillies and get some baskets and watch some country music shindig show. And, you know, the Bagnell Dam Strip. You know, when I was growing up, the Bagnell Dam Strip was still heavily ingrained with the hillbilly culture. Two-bit town. All of the real old school hillbilly culture pieces.
Right.
And you see today that the hillbilly culture at Lake of the Ozarks is almost extinct. It's almost extinct. You know, two-bit town's going away. The strip is being modernized and nobody even can comprehend hillbilly Lake of the Ozarks. What are you talking about?
Right.
Well, in the 60s and 70s, that's what it was. And to me, Davis Baskets is one of the only remaining artifacts from that time that show really the hillbilly culture, the hillbilly tourism culture of Lake of the Ozarks. So obviously in my older days, I wanted to preserve that, seeing it kind of go away as it has. And Emily, being my wife of many years, she got sick of me saying every time we drove by the Davis Basket sign, oh my gosh, I want one of those Davis Basket signs so bad. Every single time we drove by. And there's only two ways to get a Davis Basket sign. You have to either steal it, or you have to know somebody who has one, which I'm not going to steal. We're good Christian folks. And I didn't know anybody that had one. I tried to buy one every time I went by the store or any chance I got. Well, Emily came up with a third way. Okay. Right. And this third way was genius. For my birthday last year, she commissioned an artist friend of mine in Kansas City by the name of Dan Hadley to paint me the Davis Basket sign, mm-hmm. which is brilliant, right? Because mm-hmm. I don't have to steal it, not to know anybody. I've got it, right?
And it's hand-painted.
It's hand-painted. Yeah. It's a work of art. It was great. And I'm telling you right now, if you're going to have like four people in your family, you want to have a preacher, a doctor, a lawyer, and an artist. Mm-hmm. And Dan Hadley, even though he is not family per se, he is the artist that we know and love. And she surprised me. We got off a cruise in October and I came home and she had the Basket King Hillbilly sign hand painted for me. Super thrilled. I couldn't believe it, right? It was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my whole life. I was so excited. I put online, I put on the vintage Lake of the Ozarks site. And it had a great response, right? I mean, because it strikes a nerve in anyone who's actually lived at Lake of the
People
Ozarks.
People love old Lake of the Ozarks stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
It, like, every time, it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
If it's a vintage, old kind of lake of yesteryear kind of thing, people go crazy for
they,
it.
Oh, yeah. I do, too.
It goes back to what, not to interrupt your story, but it goes back to what we were saying earlier. There's something about just, especially at the lake, there's something special about the past mm-hmm. that people just, they're like, nostalgia and really sweet memories, and mm-hmm. things that they just want to go back there. So like,
right.
Pictures or different things that take mm-hmm. them back there. I
think yeah.
It's amazing to see how those resonate with people.
Old school Tantera, old school mm-hmm. Lodge of the Four Seasons, all of these things are just fantastic. So I get the basketing sign. I put it online, super excited about it. And all of a sudden I get a Facebook messenger back to technology,
right?
Yep. Get a Facebook message. And it's from a gentleman named Scott Gwilliam. And he's from Lynn Creek, Missouri. And he goes, I saw your beautiful piece of art that your wife made you. And I want to let you know that I befriended Delmar and Lisa back in the day. And they allowed me to take one of the Hillbilly Head signs off of the billboard to keep. And I was like, you're lucky, right? Like, I would never be that lucky. Mm-hmm. Like, this is fantastic. And he goes, when I was out there, I took it down, fully expecting to preserve it because he wanted to preserve the Lake of the Ozarks history like I did. Because, if you drive by the signs today, which for the folks that aren't from this area, there's probably 10 billboards, huge billboards with these hillbilly heads right. on them. Some are missing. All of them are in bad yep. disrepair. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not going to be that long until
right.
I'll have the yeah. only one you can actually tell is a hillbilly
sign.
They'll
all be gone eventually.
Yeah. So, he wanted to preserve it, but he kind of felt bad because he promised them that he would preserve them, but he had not had a chance to. And they were behind his shed on the ground. And, they weren't long for this world.
Right.
So I was like, oh, well, that's a fantastic story. He goes, would you like to have them? And I thought to myself, there's no way this guy's going to just give me these. There's no way. He goes, if you'll preserve these, I will give these to you. And I was blown away. I said, absolutely. I'm the guy. I'll figure out a way to paint. Mm-hmm. I will get them mounted for everyone to see to preserve this history. And he goes, by the way, I have the finger sign. I'm like, are you kidding me? You got the finger that says yeah. here tis? Because at the top of the billboard, there's a big finger that says here tis right, on the point of the story.
Gun finger pointing.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's like 10 hillbilly heads. There's only two here tis. Mm-hmm. Right. And, I said, you got the here tis sign. He goes, yeah, when we were getting down the hillbilly head, the here tis sign had blown off in a tornado or a storm. It was off in the woods. Wow. It was just laying there. This thing's like, you'll see
that. Yeah,
it's like 12 feet long. Mm-hmm. The thing is huge. And it survived falling off a 30-foot billboard onto the ground with minimal damage. I couldn't believe it.
Amazing.
So I gathered up some friends. I gathered Emily and my friends Hogg, which is Aaron Hasty, and Jess. My good buddy Huck, we all jumped in a pickup truck and went over to his house and we picked up these signs, put them on a trailer, brought them home. And do you want me to talk about the cold weather and the paint falling
yeah.
off? Okay.
Go.
So the day I brought them home, it was 10 below zero. Okay. Because these things, listen, if you're a picker. If you're a guy that wants to go out and find old stuff, when you find it, it's time to go get it.
Right.
Right. You don't meander around. Mm-hmm. So it was 10 below zero. We all got out there, could barely breathe. It was so freaking cold, and brought him home and just laid him on the side of the barn. And I'm sitting inside and we're celebrating. We're looking at him. And there's so much like oak dust on them. And, you know, just kind of, it was nasty. They mm-hmm. were nasty. I said, I wonder what happens if we clean them off. So I got a bucket with hot water. And the reason I did hot water is because it's freaking cold.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to freeze to death trying to do this. And I got pictures of it that I sent you, but we went outside and scrubbed down the hillbilly head, not the finger, hillbilly head with hot water. And it looked great. I mean, the paint was awesome on it. I couldn't believe how good it cleaned up. Mm-hmm. A lot of times this old stuff you find just like a little bit of cleaning or a little bit of paint really brings it out. The colors popped. It was great. Went inside and super happy. Slept good that night. Came out the next day and at least 50% of the paint had fallen off and it was just laying on the ground. I guess the water got behind the paint chips and just busted
froze
all the paint off.
Like pushed mm-hmm. the paint off.
And I instantly went into a, well, I can't sleep good for like weeks now because I knew me not being a sign painter, if I didn't have something to go by to basically trace, to paint it back, it was going to be gone forever. So literally the thing I was trying to avoid, which is the sign just going into oblivion, was right. happening right in front of my eyes.
Panic.
I went into panic mode. So I brought him inside and I knocked off all the paint, which was just heart-wrenching to knock off all the original, not all the original paint, but a good portion of the original paint came off.
Because at that point you have to, I guess, right?
You it's have like, to.
Okay, well, if we're going to restore it, mm-hmm. I mean, you got to start fresh.
Yeah.
Half of it's already off.
Right. It became a, from a preservation of what was there to a restoration project because, sorry, for those of you on the podcast, I almost knocked over my vintage bar, but mm-hmm. no big deal.
Nope. Yep.
And we're good.
An earthquake.
We're alive. So I started painting, but what's great is Delmar had those signs painted every year mm-hmm. and paid $10,000 a year to have those signs painted. You have to sell a lot of baskets
right.
to have $10,000 to paint your signs. So that means that there was multiple layers. I mean, of old lead paint, like we're talking decades and decades worth of lead paint on these. And where the paint wasn't, the original people that built the signs scored it with a knife. So it scored out the eyeball, scored out the beard. So even where the paint was missing, you see where the lines were. And we looked at it Emily and I looked at it and we thought, well, we can do this. So started with the eyeball, because if you're going to paint a face, the eye is the most important piece. If you get the eye wrong, everything else is wrong.
Right.
Because as a human being, you always focus in on the eye when you right. look at a sign.
Yep.
So I got the eye right. And once I got the eye right, I started sleeping. It's like, I can sleep. I got the eyeball right. It's inside the garage. It's good. And of course, this is in the middle of winter. So every time the temperature would get up to 60 degrees, I would come out and I would just paint a little bit, you know. And then, of course, when spring came, it really started to rapidly go. And then Emily painted on it a bit. I painted on it a bit. And finally, next thing you know, you got a hillbilly head.
So, I mean, you were able to follow the guide, kind
yeah.
of the etching or mm-hmm. whatever on there.
Yeah. And nobody knows.
Hey, my numbers kit.
Exactly. Right? And nobody knows that exists because it's 30 feet up in the air.
Right.
Like
right.
you don't realize yeah, that they, right. they scored it all out. So I was really, really happy.
That's cool.
A lot of prayer because I'm telling you, that was my like basically the holy grail sitting there of things from Lake of the Ozarks that right. I wanted to preserve yeah. and it was melting in front of me.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely one of the most like visually iconic mm-hmm. things that represents old Lake of the Ozarks, hillbilly Lake of the Ozarks.
Yeah, like, I think so.
There's a handful of things visually that maybe match up to that.
The only thing I think that matches up to that is the Indian at the strip.
I was going to say the Indian or the hillbilly across from him, uh-huh. you know, the yeah. halfwit or whatever.
Halfwit, and, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, there aren't many. And so.
But I want to go on record saying that Emily's original artwork that she commissioned for me right. is my favorite.
There you go.
Okay. That means more to me than anything. Cause out of all the gifts I've had in my 45 years of living, I've never had anyone put more thought and more, you know, personal mm-hmm. touch to getting me a gift. And I'm a hard guy to buy for. Okay. I mean, yeah. you're talking to a fellow that, you know, if it's not, you know, strange and unusual and like impossible to find, I'm, you know,
yeah.
not excited. So yeah, that's my favorite
just
one.
Just hopping on Timo
And yeah, there's no Timu. There's no Timu.
I mean, that's a Timu.
That's okay. I said 2,080 Timu, hours Timu, a year.
And finding you some, cheap derivative.
Yeah.
That's not your jam.
No, if you order one on Timu, it'd only be about six inches tall. That'd be really sad. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's an awesome. I mean, they're both awesome.
Yeah.
For different reasons. So
yeah.
It's
cool.
And then again, I mean, you're kind of filling this place up with memorabilia.
Emily says this is like an extension of the inside of my brain. I mean, I've got I've got a World War II, 6 foot tall practice bomb in the corner and my dad's roll top desk that he pulled out of a coal mine in outside of Joplin, Missouri, I think is where that came from. And diver suits and old bars and that piano that you see right there that's behind all the baseball cards, which it's a whole nother story. Do you want an autographed picture of Oprah? I was a little off topic, but I do have an autographed photograph of Oprah. My buddy, who's an old car collector. I know, let me explain. I know, it sounds crazy, but a buddy of mine, he goes and buys storage units. And he bought a storage unit, like the default on. He bought a storage unit, and it was full of memorabilia. It was full of baseball cards. Yeah, it's got pictures of Clint Eastwood that are signed and Arnold Schwarzenegger. But there's a framed picture of Oprah that I will offer you for $5. You can have
I think that one belongs right here.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. I really feel like that belongs here.
Emily does not feel like any of it belongs here. She wants it gone. But anyway, behind all the baseball cards and crap that you see that I've got to sell on eBay, that old piano came out of the school of this little town we live in. And the school was run down. I mean, it was in bad shape and it was about to fall in. And I said, hey, can I have that piano? They said, you can have the piano. Well, the problem with having a piano is that an old school piano weighs like 3,000 pounds.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So in the middle of summer, in my younger days, in the middle of summer, like July, I went to this unair-conditioned abandoned building and started dismantling this piano, which my ultimate goal was I'm a musician, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, here's my plug. Okay. I play at Margaritaville all summer long.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Down at the Tiki Bar.
Okay.
So check out Cody West Music. Okay.
There we go.
There's my plug. Cody
Perfect.
West Music.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I wanted to put a keyboard in that old piano case, but you have to take the entire everything out of it.
Oh yeah.
And in the middle of summer in an unair conditioned building that's falling in over the top of you, that's quite a chore. Mm-hmm. So, I got about, 3 foot up in the back of it that was full of rat nests and there was a dead possum inside of it. It was horrifying.
Awesome.
Okay. I took the cast iron harp out of the back of it that weighed 150, 200 pounds and finally got the piano empty enough to where I can move it out. So moved out here. I used it as a gun safe in my house for a while. I put a hinge on the side of it. Wow. Who's going to look for guns inside of a
That's brilliant.
Old piano? Yeah. The only problem is when you live in a log cabin like we do, fire, fire becomes like a concern.
Yeah.
So I didn't want stuff to get burned up. So we ended up securing all of our valuables in a safe that's impenetrable and guarded by cameras. And I said that on camera. So everybody, knows that.
Right.
But anyway, the piano remains and that's where that came from.
So yeah. I mean, again, you've just sort of revealed that old stuff is like an addiction.
Oh yeah.
It's like a deep seated addiction. Mm-hmm. Was there a point in your life when all of a sudden you sort of looked up and were like, I think I'm one of these people that is obsessed with old stuff?
Was there
self-recognition that ever happened at this point?
It's hereditary.
Okay.
Because like I mentioned, that roll top desk behind you, my dad built that in the 70s or 80s, right around when I was born. It came in pieces and he went to a coal mine and it was the foreman's desk out of the coal mine. It's still like coal dust
on
it.
That's a cool story.
If you see my dad's house, there's a canoe hanging from the ceiling from the 30s. And I've always had a father who, showed me the old ways and that collected the old things and showed me to appreciate those old things. So, my mother lives in a, an early 1900s home, preserves all of those things. And I still got, family heirlooms that are old wall crank phones that are Tiger Oak. And it literally, I was born with it, I guess you could say. It's just my family If you go to either one of their houses, you'll see that they're just chock full of artifacts. And I'm just trying to build upon that. Now, they don't have hillbilly heads.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, only one person does.
They don't have hillbilly heads. They don't have, you know, giant Osage painted life-size, you know, warriors and Sergeant Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band drums. And
yeah.
I'm a little more far out. I think that they don't have dive suits and weird stuff like that. But I think I may be a bit more artistically, you know, I have more of an eye for kind of the far out, you know. So
it's not very practical. I would call it more artistic than practical.
There's nothing practical. No, actually, you could call it not practical. You could say giant waste of money. Like there's that too, right? You know, so it's,
I don't know. It's good. I mean, I appreciate that these things are being kept and collected and sort of cherished by somebody that recognizes that a connection with the past is meaningful. Yeah.
Well, you know, here's the deal. One day when all the Davis Baska signs are completely gone and they've been stolen or storms take them or the paint's gone, you could always drive down this little country road and you can look off in the distance and you'll always see it. Because as long as I'm living, I'll make sure I maintain them and keep them so that the public can see. So, you know, I'm not going to sell them or, you know, unless I can't eat anything but ramen noodles, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. So I'll keep them for everyone to see, right? So, you know, you drive by and you'll see them and you can look off and remember Lake of the Ozarks history. And
As it once was.
Yeah, it's my contribution to humanity.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
You know,
that's
not
a bad, that's not a bad thing. Well, anything else we should hit on?
I don't know, Emily. Anything you have to add to this?
How much more time do you have?
Yeah, oh my gosh. It all started.
I'm getting close. I know.
It all started when I was a young girl growing up at Lake of the Ozarks, and never thought I'd ever be around this much old garbage.
Well, we'll have folks follow you at. I mean, what's Cody West Music? Is Facebook,
Instagram? So it's Facebook. Facebook, okay. Cody West Music. It's got my, where I play. I play in a Fleetwood Mac tribute band called The Gypsies in Springfield, which is pretty cool. Dress the part, do the whole thing, which is cool. We play Southbound Bar and Grill. Primarily play Margaritaville through the summer for holiday weekends. I've been doing that. You know what's great? So I grew up in Tantara. We actually had a house in Tantara. Okay. And so Tantara is kind of like this old Lake of the Ozarks thing, right? To where everything was like old wood beams. And
yeah, the estates, Tantara Estates.
Yep, Tantara Estates, yeah. And, you know, when Margaritaville came through and Jimmy Buffett bought it, they started renovating everything and they had a need for music. So I was the very first act to play Margaritaville when it opened.
Nice.
And, you know, Brian Powers, Power Entertainment, Fred Danner, which is a Lake of the Ozarks legend in and of himself. He's ran Tantara for forever.
Right.
We've been doing this for like 12 years now, where I've been playing Margaritaville all summer, which is great for Emily because she gets to go to Margaritaville and hang out.
That's nice.
You know, I end up playing until, you know, my fingers bleed outside, but it's fun. Everybody loves it. It's a good time. It's a good time. It is a good time.
Folks, check you out.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Thanks for giving me the tour and got some great photos and videos.
Nice.
And I love the stories. And dude, this bar is, I want this.
It almost makes you want to have a drink.
It does. It does.
Belly up to the bar.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you. Thanks for the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So that was my interview with Cody West. I'll just say thanks publicly to Cody and Emily for having me out to their really beautiful place, showing me around and just hosting me. Can't wait to see what other old stuff Cody digs up, maybe to restore, and we might have to have him back on again someday because that was a really, really cool conversation. Well, hey, that's our take on the lake. Thank you for listening. Stay anchored, stay curious, and we'll see you soon.